Hi, I'm Arnur, I'm alcoholic. It would be a lie to say that I didn't think about what to say. I'm not really used to speaking in English. But I do have a message. My experience is, it's not just my experience, it's something that changed my life. And I'm not here today to tell you that my life is great and blah, 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 just because my life is great. I'm here to tell you that my life is great because I worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really did. To give you a little background, when my great grandfather was a really famous drunk in Iceland. They wrote books about him. How he was the kind of guy that he went out to buy some milk, and he came to about 3 months later in the Norwegian army, and nobody knew that he even left the country. And because of this, and because of this, of his alcoholism, my father didn't drink. He has never drunk one sip. He has never smoked one puff of a cigarette. He has never done nothing, because he suspects that he would be the same. And my great grandfather was a real alcoholic too, and his great grandfather. And my dad is the first guy, the first man in I think a millennia or something that's sober. There's a line that at least to the 1500s, I think, of drunks in Iceland. And we Icelanders, we are genealogy buffs. We know everybody, and everybody knows everybody. And you know this, you know, I can trace my ancestry back to a Turkish king from 700 something. You know, so we know there are drunks in my family all the way back a few hundred years. And my dad told me, in no uncertain terms, when I was a kid, do not drink. It's not good. It's not good for you. It's not good. And it wasn't just because he told me that not to drink that I didn't drink. When my granddad got really old, my dad never talked to my granddad. He didn't go to his funeral. He never forgave him. And when I was maybe 8, my mom invited granddad to dinner on Easter Sunday. And dad had to work. And I knew why. I knew because my great-granddad was an alcoholic, he was a drunk, and he had ruined my dad's life. And it was no secret. It was just, you know, I knew at 8. So I didn't drink. And, you know, I went to school and I met, you know, just basic kid stuff. And then when my friends started drinking, they were all saying, "Hey, man, have a drink. Have one. And I all said, "No. No, I'm not going to drink. I'm not." My dad told me, and I told him that story, and they said, "Oh, yeah, whatever, man." And and then when I was 16 or 17, I went to a party, and one of those parties where the cops came, and well, at that party, I think the cops arrested 30 people. It was one of those parties. It's not a like a regular party. And I was there sober, you know, because everybody knew I didn't drink. But I got really thirsty, and I went into the bathroom and I got a little bit of water just out of the tap. And it had a funny taste to it. So I went out into the party and asked my buddies, "Do you have something to drink?" And they said, "Here." And I got this glass of clear liquid. And I took a drink. My first one. And it's like somebody said, I was like a freeze-dried alcoholic. The sun rose. I understood. I had this heat coming up from my stomach up and flushed my face and down my hands and up the seventh chakra, and it opened up the connection to God. And I went into a trance and I walked home surprised. I was so surprised. My dad was such an asshole, you know. He had been missing the point. If this was it, then, you know, and drinking for me, what happened then was I basically started drinking every weekend. And I drank every weekend for, till I stopped drinking. Because drinking isn't just about relaxing for me. It's not about making friends. It's not about, it's about, it's about, it's a spiritual experience in a bottle, you know. The fourth chapter talks about, says that we've been worshippers. And I was a worshipper, you know. Drinking for me is a religious ceremony. You know, in Iceland we have the state liquor store, and I would go on Fridays, and I would on Thursdays we would read from the Bible, which is basically the wine list from the state liquor store. We'd call it the Bible, and I would pick and choose what haven't I tried? Okay, and then I would go and buy my regular thing, which was a half a case of Grolsch. And I love Grolsch. Grolsch is a great beer. It's because in Iceland we don't get the Danish Tubo, we get an Icelandic Tubo, and it's not really that good. So I drank Grolsch religiously. You know, I even developed a talent for making the sound it does when you open the bottle, like this. You know. You know, and I would buy a bottle of Bacardi. And I would go home, and I would put it in the freezer to, you know, speed the process up. And I would go and take a shower, get ready. I would go out of the shower. I would open up a half a liter can of Grolsch, and I would drink it. And I would start the next one. And then I would go into the bathroom again, take the rest of the... I would look in the mirror, and I was okay. I would get dressed. I would go into the living room, and I would open up the Bacardi bottle, and it makes this sound when you open it. It cracks, you know. It, the cap. You take the cap off, and it makes this cracking sound. And it was a holy moment. You know, I'm a worshiper, and I did this religiously for years. And then. I would, in a few short minutes, go back into the bathroom. I would put some gel in my hair and look into the mirror and say, "Tonight's the night." And and then I would pass out with gel in my hair. Sometimes I would go somewhere and have a party, but this is not about partying. It's not about making friends. It's about being okay, you know. Because what happens when I don't do this is the reason I'm here tonight. Sometimes, you know, I'm a puker. I puke. I puke a lot. I've puked all over the place. I've puked on every square inch of my body except between my ass cheeks. I would wake up and smell the puke and try to figure out if it was from last night, from my hair, from the pillow, or, you know, whatever. And you know, and I pee my pants a lot. You know, it's, you could count the incidents when I didn't pee my pants on the fingers of one hand each year, you know. I would always pee my pants, always. I don't know, it doesn't make me an alcoholic, but what I'm saying is that my drinking started to have effects, consequences, really nasty consequences from the get-go, right from the bat. And it didn't stop me from drinking. You had your consequences and I had mine, you know. And I'm not here because I peed my pants, you know. I peed my pants for years, you know. I know, I know everything about, you know, washing clothes and linens and, you know, and everything in a blackout, you know. It's just a skill that I developed because I had to, you know. Yeah. My sister is here. I once got drunk and came home and I don't remember doing it, but apparently I drank a bottle of liqueur, really sweet orange stuff, puked on the floor, and cleaned it up with a knitted shawl, and put it in the washing machine with the pasta screws and everything, and boiled it, and it came out like a handkerchief, you know. You know, and I woke up, and she was yelling, "What the fuck? What the hell is this?" And you know, and nobody ever told me that I had a drinking problem, ever, never, ever. You know, because in my family there are guys worse than me. You know, they're pioneers in drug smuggling and you know, and just general, you know, beating up cops, and you know, and I don't even register on the alcoholism scale. It's not. They're just bad. They do bad stuff, you know. And nobody ever told me to stop drinking or check my drinking. I peed on the floor and I puked in the you know, everywhere, you know. And I never even got the idea that I should stop. It was always the chicken or the beef or the steak, or I was too tired, or I'd been doing a lot of work, and blah, 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 blah. I never got the idea to stop drinking. Not to stop. No. I would try to take pauses, and my version of controlled drinking or not drinking is I would try and I would not go to the liquor store. And I would wait until after 7 o'clock, and I would, I'm just gonna watch TV, and nothing on TV was any fun, you know. I would just, you know, zap through the channels, and nothing caught my eye, and I didn't wanna watch the fucking TV, so I just smoked cigarettes and looked it into the ceiling, and you know, and I would just go, I'll just go to sleep, and then I would go into my room and undress and lay in bed and couldn't close my eyes. And I don't know why. Sometimes there were voices keeping me awake. Sometimes there weren't. But what happened every time, this never worked, by the way, never. What happened every time is that maybe after an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, I would put my clothes on again and go out to a bar and get drunk. And I would, you know, I'm, you know, this, from the outside, this looks like a pitiful human being. I'm pathetic, you know. I'm not a, you know, I know some guys that did really cool stuff when they drank. You know, they beat up cops and, you know, and they running from the law and hiding dope from the SWAT team and stuff like that, but that's not my story. I just drink, I pass out, I pee my pants, and I never, ever stop. Ever. And nothing ever holds me back. I tried in January 8th. Sorry. Should have put that on silence. January 8th of 1996 is a. I don't remember dates. I have no recollection of any date or anything. Or I have no. I remember what happened between 93 and 2000, but I don't know in what order. I don't know when what happened or what happened before the other thing, but I will never never forget January 8th, 1996. I had a nervous breakdown, and my mom, who is raised by a communist and doesn't really believe in God, sent me to a priest. And I sat before that priest, a middle-aged, bald man, who said, asked me what he could do for me, and I just sat there and cried. I just cried and cried and cried and cried and cried. And I said, she, they, and left. I was done. I was done. I had no ideas about anything, what I should do or whatever. And I was just done. I was just hollowed out. January 9th is when I arrive in Denmark. And this is really popular. It's like a national sport in Iceland. It's alcoholics that are at the end of the rope. They go to Denmark. And you know, I lived on the street. I lived, you know, I didn't know where I would stay the next night. Sometimes I was staying with family or families of some families that had given up on me. I stayed in strange places here in Denmark. And most of the time I was drunk, and my favorite was a beer called Krone. If you remember that, it's called Star Pilsner, or was called Star Pilsner after that. And it's not the best beer you can buy, but it's no, it's not the worst. It's it works, yeah. But the worst beer I've ever drank, it's German, called Hochheimer, and that's yeah, that's a that was nasty. That beer is so bad that we tried to put it in the freezer to freeze it down. We just couldn't drink it, so we had to put it in the freezer and open it up with a can opener and eat it with a spoon. To you know, it was so bad, you know. But you know, Krone was cheap, and I didn't have any money. I went on B stand for illegally, by the way, and I was going to go to school. There's a school, I think I remember correctly, called Glashäuser Handelshögskola, and I never went. I got a place at a college, and I came there with my suitcase, which had it had a blanket, it had porno mags, it had Time and Newsweek, and some clothes. And I got a black and white TV for free from somebody, and I would stay there in the room, take a shower maybe 10 times a day, because there was nothing else to do. And I would drink Krone and think, tomorrow I'll go and apply for that school. And I would wake up and think, I've got to get something to eat. And I would eat something I'd steal from the kitchen or whatever. And I would have one krona before I left, which turned into another one, and I never left. I don't drink and go to work. I don't drink and do anything except drink. I just drink and drink. You know, the first one is followed by the second one, which is followed by the next one, by the next one, by the next one, by the next one, by the next one. And, you know, when I came to AA, they said, you have a abnormal physical reaction to alcohol. If you go out, you will drink abnormally. And I would just go, what's your point? You know, I don't know how to drink any other way. I just drink. One day, I saw that the Star Pilsner was getting in my way. So I'd take the bus down to the school. It was a summer day, and it was in June or July of 96. And I went where the school is, and I stood outside across the street from the school, and I looked in. There was a gate and a driveway in, and I just stood there, and I knew that I would never, you know, I would never be able to cross the street, you know, because I don't have power to do anything, you know. My granddad, my other communist first grandchild. I was the star of the show when I was a kid. I was going to be the hope for the family or whatever, you know, because it's not a really, you know, we're not upper class, we're not lower class, we're just drunks and lamos, you know. It's just, and I didn't, because I started drinking and I lost the power of choice in drink. I just lost it. I don't know if I ever had it, but I didn't have it at that time. I had no power to do anything except drink. And this was in 96. I stood across the street and I turned back, went into the bus again and went into my room and drank some more. I got deported from Denmark a few weeks later because, you know, I was a nuisance, and they found out about the illegal beast end and all that stuff. Basically, because I came whining to the Kommunekonto, and they said, "Hey, you're on beast end. You're not supposed to have that." And they offered me this great deal: get out of Denmark and we'll drop everything, you know. And I went and I drank for four more years. And the details of that, I would, you know, the details are not important. The details are not because of the reason I'm here, you know. Once I came out of a blackout with a shotgun in my hand, shooting at buildings, I don't know why. Once I would come out, and, you know, I would come out of blackouts, this and that place, and I know, and I've had some horrible experiences. I've done some horrible, crazy, stupid stuff. You know, I'm not even supposed to be here. You know. The reason I'm here is not because I gave up and went to rehab or anything. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. Even with all this stuff, I didn't know. I had no conscious idea of alcoholism. None. Or even a problem. I knew my life sucked, but that was about it. That's only about the only thing I knew. I am here because I was 12-stepped. What happens is that the days like January 8th have come five times. Five times I can remember. When I'm just at the end of my rope. When I'm just, I don't know what the next move will be. I don't know. And November 13th was one of those days. November 13th, 2000. That's my sobriety date. That's the first day I didn't take a drink. By November 15th, I had gotten the idea that has always saved me from these problems. And the idea sounds like this: oh, now I know what I'll do. I'll just blah, 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 blah. You know. When you drink like I do, you end up in strange places, and you end up at the end of your rope. I'm not talking about being hungover. I'm talking about total devastation. I'm talking about the end of the line. You reach the end of the line. But I also have this idea that I know how to get out of this mess. And I would always do something, move to Denmark, become a Danish teacher. I don't know if, well, why. You know, it's one of the ideas. You know, and this day, November 15th, I was going to get a job. And I went to see a friend of mine and asked her if she could. I was going to ask her for a job. And she said, this was the conversation. She said, hi. And I said, hi. And she said, do you want coffee? And I said, yes. And the phone rang and she went away and said, I'll only be a minute. I sat down, waited for the coffee, poured up a cup of coffee and I started drinking it. And she came back and she took some coffee and some milk, sat down and said, could it be that you're alcoholic? I've never talked to her about my drinking. She just saw it. It was obvious to her. It was obvious to a lot of people, but not to me, you know. Not to me. And I said, I don't know. And what happened was that I went to an open AA meeting because I was not sure I was alcoholic. And at the open AA meeting, there was a 20-minute speaker and a 40-minute speaker, and I remember the 40-minute speaker. It was a long-haired, blonde, middle-aged woman who had done cocaine, had children, slept with a lot of men, went to the USA, been in prison. And I'm not blonde, I'm not a woman, I'm not middle-aged. I'm not any of this, but she is the same as me. You know, my story is not the story of a guy that went to Denmark and went back and blah, blah, blah. It's a story of an alcoholic that drinks no matter what. That's my story, and that's probably your story too. No consequence of alcoholism has ever stopped me. And I went to this meeting, and 2 days later, I went to another meeting. And that's my home group today. And the guys there, they didn't beat about the bush. They said that they described alcoholism. They talked about the physical craving, the mental obsession, the spiritual malady. They talked about the solution. They talked about God, and they talked about the steps. And I didn't hear any of it. Not a single word. But I did get the idea that there was something there and that I was welcome and that I should keep coming. And after maybe a month, I had gotten a job. You know, I got a great job. And I got the old idea back that I knew how to get out of this one. And I started reasoning with the guys. And they would say, do you have a sponsor? And I said, do I need one? Tell me, show me where it's in the book that I need a sponsor. You know, it's nowhere in the book. And I knew that, and they knew that, and I would use logic like this to not do anything. Because I was afraid. Somebody asked about the sponsorship thing today. I was waiting for the perfect sponsor. I was waiting for a sponsor that was just like me, who had done the horrible, crazy, stupid stuff I did. And I'm not talking about just setting fire to houses and stuff like that. I'm talking about nasty, disgusting stuff. And I was waiting for somebody to come up to the podium and talk about nasty, disgusting stuff. And I was waiting for, not only for that, I was waiting for somebody who was just like me, who just did something and got all the results. Because I didn't want a sponsor. I didn't want help. I didn't want any help. I wanted to work my program. And my program is not a program. It's basically doing as little as possible and, you know, and I was just deluded that. You see, This doesn't work for an alcoholic, because if you're something like me, you need the magic that alcohol gives you. You need it. And I cannot underline the effect of alcohol on me. And I'm not talking about peeing my pants. I didn't drink alcohol to pee my pants, you know. I didn't drink alcohol to throw up. I didn't drink alcohol to, you know, get arrested. I drank because that did stuff for me that nothing else could. You know, jerking off and watching porn and doing all stuff, crazy stuff, it's good, it's nice. But nothing does what alcohol does for me. Nothing. Nothing. And I've tried a lot of stuff. And I was deluding myself. I thought that somehow, by some strange miracle, I could do nothing and just become okay. I thought that drinking was my problem. But drinking isn't my problem. Drinking is my solution. Drinking is my solution to all my, to the solution to all my problems. I drink until I don't know. I drink to the heart and lungs working state. I drink so I don't to not to know. I drink to pass out. I drink so I drink to not remember. And for a guy like me, you can't do nothing and expect any results. And I learned that if nothing happens, nothing happens. And I will get progressively worse one day at a time. Because I need the thing that alcohol gave me. I need it. I have this deep spiritual thirst they talked about today. I crave it. I have to have it. And I can't have it by applying my ideas to my life. Because my ideas got me drunk. And I was waiting for the sponsor that was a total loser. I was waiting for a sponsor that was a total loser that would guide me into doing nothing and get everything. And I've never seen anybody come up to the podium and say, "My life was a total mess, and I did nothing, and my life is great." I've never seen that happen. You may be the exception to the rule. You may be. And if you are, I really, truly want to hear about it. I really do. Because what I do today is not just go to meetings. I fought AA for 5 months. I fought it. I went to a meeting a day and did nothing until I was again at the end of my rope. And I just broke down. And I went to the biggest dweeb in AA and asked him to be my sponsor. And he said, "Okay, call me tomorrow." And we started working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started writing inventory. And I came to him after maybe 4 days of writing inventory and told him that I really didn't have any resentments. And and he said, "The first first alcoholic that isn't resentful. That's the first one, guys." And I would do what I always did. You know, these 5 months in meetings weren't just me in meetings toughing it out. I was totally, totally, totally insane. Somebody would say something that I didn't like, and my mind would fill up with a fantasy of, you know, taking a crowbar and slamming it into his head, and what's the expression on his face when I swirled it around in his brain? You know, that's my mind. And if it really irritated me, I fantasized about somehow, without him knowing, forcing him to put his left hand into a meat grinder and rotate with his other hand and watch him cry, not because of the pain, because he was saying goodbye to his left arm for the last time. And then I wondered why I couldn't sleep at night. I was just totally, totally insane. And this is not because I'm insane. This is because I have resentments, or had resentments. I was really, 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 really sick. And I did really, 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 really sick stuff because I was really, really spiritually sick. I didn't have a solution in my life. And this, and my life wasn't like this when I was drinking. This happened during 5 months of sobriety. I just got totally, totally insane. And no small wonder that I finally gave up and asked the biggest weeb in AA to help me. And we started working the steps, and I wrote resentment inventory, and I started taking commitments. And, you know, I can describe to you some amazing stuff that happened. I can really describe it to you. But the sad thing is that you would probably not relate. There are no words. You know, you can't relate to being as sick as I am unless you have been as sick as I am. You just can't. So I can tell you about the horrors. I can tell you about how after 2 years of sobriety, I saw a table saw, and every day during my meditation, I would meditate on sawing off my left arm with a table saw. With the blood flying everywhere in my meditation, working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, helping alcoholics. This has all been removed. It's all been removed. Somebody was talking today about, you know, just driving and then spontaneously becoming depressed and wanting to, you know, end their lives or whatever. And it's not proper for me to tell you the chain of thoughts that would end with the idea that, yeah, I'll just go and kill myself now. But there's only one thought that would start it all. I started with one thought, and then, oh, you're such a fucking loser. You're such a disgusting person. You're such a sorry human being. And it would go on and on and on and on for a few minutes, and then it would end with, yeah, you should just go kill yourself now. And I can tell you that working the steps, that, and other people talk about inventory better than I do, but I can tell you that I had to inventory a lot. A lot. I had to do a lot of inventory and a lot of amends to clean out. And I have experiences now with guys I'm working with, guys with a few months sober, guys with decades sober, of applying this stuff and feeling. It's not something you see. You can see it in their eyes before they realize it. But you can feel it when you take the spiritual knife and you cut them from here to here, and all the bad stuff flows out, and you can feel it flowing out of the room, out into the room. You can feel the person changing in front of you. You know, AA can be anything you like it to be. It can be a coffee shop. It can be a get together of friends. It can be a place where you learn new spiritual tricks. It can be a place to go if you really want to control your life. Really. I've had some experiences with that. Turning the steps into God. Worshipping the steps instead of worshipping God. Instead of trying to keep and grow and improve my conscious contact with God, I would turn the steps into our God, and I would just use them like a keyboard. pressed the button when I saw it, you know, oh, I feel like a four-step. And I'd press the four-step, and I would write inventory. And then we'd do a fifth step. You know, it's you can do this. You can do anything you want in AA. You can come here for the coffee. You can come here for the girls, or the men, or whatever, you know. But you can also come here for healing, real healing. And it doesn't really just come by getting a sponsor. I know a lot of guys that got a sponsor and a great and some great sponsors. And they worked the steps and got a home group and blah blah blah. But they really never committed themselves to AA. They never went all the way. They didn't want AA to be anything except what their mind's idea of AA was. They didn't want. There was once a princess, a small, really small princess, and she lived in this castle with 1,000 rooms. And when she got older, her father, the king, said to her, "You can go into every room in the castle, except this one. Except this one. You cannot go into that room ever." And the little princess never went into the room, and she lived happily ever after. You see? If you don't take the step, if you don't do it, then the adventure is not for you. You know, the end of the adventure will be coming to meetings and listening to people like me who have had their lives changed. That will be the end of the adventure. Great. Then I'm a great guy, and tomorrow I'll go back to Iceland, and you'll never see me again. But this is only the beginning of the adventure. It really is. And for me, it happened by committing myself to AA. I said to myself, I'm going to do AA because my life depends on it. And this here can't be the end of the line. It just can't. There is more. And I have found more at every step of the way. Every step of the way. And I have got free of stuff that you wouldn't even believe. And you wouldn't even believe. You know? This is life-changing stuff we're dealing with here. We're dealing with life and death. Most of us die if we don't do it. Most of us die. And I know I can't scare you with death. And I'm not here to scare you with death. I'm here to pull you with a vision. Because my life is not the same. And it's not because of something that happened 5 years ago, 4 years ago or something. It's something that happened this week. You know, I got free of stuff this week I never thought I would even have to get free of. You know, small stuff. You know, I have luxury problems. Luxury problems, real luxury problems. My biggest concern during the last year is making myself more accessible, making myself more reachable by everyone in AA, everyone who could use my help. You know, not just to the people that I approve of beforehand. Just anybody who reaches out and wants help. Because, you know, it's not because my understanding of the steps is so great and blah, 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 blah. You know, do you have the preamble here? No. Damn. It's not even inside the book? No. The AA preamble says that there you go. Thank you. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. I'm going to read what I thought it said. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others recover from alcoholism. It's not the same. We're not here to help others recover from alcoholism. I can't really help real alcoholics. I can inspire them, but I can't really help them. Only God can help them. I can be a channel. I can be a catalyst for God, but I can't really help them. I help them to recover from alcoholism. I help them so that I recover from alcoholism, not so they recover from alcoholism. And the difference is two. I help others to recover from alcoholism. And I don't know if you know it, but that's your job too. That's your job too. If you're not working with others, you're missing a lot. Just this week, I've witnessed two miracles. Just in the last week, two miracles. A sponsor of mine who raped his best friend made amends today, called me on the phone. And you know, that's courage. That's courage. And it's hard stuff we do. We do hard stuff. We're not here because we're ashamed or whatever. We're here because we can't help ourselves. And I can't really help you. Not really, not truly. But God can through me. I applied the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life, and my life changed. When my sponsor was taking me through the steps, he had me read the book to him out loud. It's not the way to do it, it's a way to do it. And I read, "Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail." And he would say, "Wait a minute. What was that?" And I said, "Well, the practical experience. Yeah. That. What did it say? Practical experience. My experience. My friend Kerry's experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail." There's a sentence missing here. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You, not me, you. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. The kick you will get is tremendous. And it really is. I have not only just cleaned up my life. Today, I'm current. I'm current with everybody. I don't know of any unfinished amends. I have some payments to make at the bank. But I'm current with everybody. Everybody. I've not only changed my life, I've affected the life of countless of others. Truly. And it's not because I'm great, because it's because I made a decision to make this my way of life. To help others and get nothing in return. I wanted to take part in the miracle. I really did. And what I got was a miracle. I'm done. Thank you.